The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it.
Good day, Tokens and Tokettes. Welcome to the weekend. It is Friday, July 19th, 2013, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the Russ Belville Show. So glad to have you here as we wind up this week. It's a hell of a day for me. I just got the keys to the new Rolla-J Studios. Took a look down there. Looks very, very nice. Can't wait to move in. It's probably what we'll be doing all weekend long. But we'll still have a few more shows here from Rollatide Studios. The cable won't be installed. The cable internet won't be installed till Wednesday. So it probably won't be till Thursday of next week that we have our first show at the new Rolla-J. But I'll take some pictures, post them on the Facebook, and you can take a look at as it gets built. Also, speaking of our shows here at Rollatide, tonight, the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour is coming to you at 8 o'clock Pacific time. But just me. Herb Thrasher's at Horning's Hideout at the Northwest String Summit, and he's completely incommunicado. So I'm going to bring you today a Hellbilly edition, all Hellbilly edition, in celebration of the String Summit and Hellbilly music, alt country, bluegrass, slamgrass, whatever you want to call it. We're going to play a tune today for our Daily Toker Tunes from Clyde and Clem's Whiskey Business, and it blends a little rap, it blends a little rock, and it blends a little bluegrass, which is perfect here for 420 radio, because we're into all that stuff. Also on today's show, I have to admit, I was out in Vancouver taking care of all the things for the house, and I did not get a guest booked for today's show, so we're going to do a little flashback video to my presentation at the Baker Institute last year, where I debated Kevin Sabet. You'll get to see my presentation prior to Sabet taking the stage. If you haven't seen that before, I hope you enjoy it. Also, we're going to go behind the headlines and take a look at GW Pharmaceuticals, which is ready to lead us right into the box canyon of medical marijuana. We'll tell you the latest developments with the British pharmaceutical manufacturer and how they're trying to corner the market on cannabis-related drugs. And we'll have a little bit of time at the end for a radical rant. We're going to talk about Roger Christie and the THC ministry. The problem of cannabis and religion has been looked at by the New York Times in a little special article. We'll give you the rundown on that. Also coming up in Toker Talk Radio, my new roommate from Florida, Left Wing Larry. You know him as Key Debt in the chat room. He will be here in hour two. And we've got special video from Brian the Red from the Justice for Trayvon Martin rally that was held in North Portland. We're packed full of information on today's show, so stay tuned. We'll be right back. Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
This is your 420 Radio News for Friday, July 19th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. Medical marijuana users still worry about DUI, from the Las Vegas Review-Journal. Medical marijuana users, if they're not careful, could easily violate the DUI standard found in Nevada revised statutes, which says it's against the law to drive with more than 2 nanograms of marijuana per milliliter in your blood or 5 nanograms of marijuana metabolite. That's a stricter standard, by the way, than exists for cocaine or heroin, 50 nanograms per milliliter, methamphetamine, 100 nanograms, or LSD, 10 nanograms. And there is no exception for people who have a prescription for medical marijuana. Assembly Majority Leader William Horn, a Democrat of Las Vegas, has tried to pass Assembly Bill 351, which would have forced prosecutors to prove the driver was actually impaired by marijuana rather than just show the nanogram standard was exceeded. It's not a hypothetical. In 2000, Jessica Williams fell asleep at the wheel of her minivan when it ran off Interstate 15 and killed 6 teenagers who were picking up trash as part of a county youth offender work program. She'd smoked marijuana hours before the accident, and although a jury determined she wasn't under the influence of the drug, Williams is serving a 42-year sentence in state prison simply because she had more marijuana in her system than was allowed by law. Does medical marijuana cure Crohn's disease? Study finds some patients had increased appetite, sleep function, and no side effects. From IBTimes.com. A new study suggests the regular use of medical marijuana may achieve the complete remission of Crohn's disease, an inflammatory bowel disorder. The study, published in Clinical Gastroenterology and Hepatology, attempted to determine the effect that regular medical marijuana use had on patients with Crohn's disease, Medical Daily reports. An examination of 21 subjects revealed that medical marijuana effectively treated symptoms in many patients while achieving complete remission in others. According to Medical Daily, patients with severe instances of Crohn's disease can defecate as many as 20 times a day. Although the illness affects 400,000 to 600,000 people in North America, many people aren't diagnosed until years after the disease manifests. Colorado's seed-to-sale marijuana tracking system will have limits, from the Denver Post. Colorado's plans for a comprehensive system to track recreational marijuana from seed to sale won't be quite so comprehensive. Officials from the State Department of Revenue said Thursday the system won't be able to start tracking marijuana weights until after the buds are harvested off the plant. Anne Marie Jensen, a lobbyist for the Colorado Association of Chiefs of Police, asked how, without keeping track of plants before harvest, the state could be sure that marijuana growers weren't under-reporting harvest amounts and diverting pot illegally into the black market. Maintaining such control over the recreational marijuana industry is seen as crucial in preventing federal raids against the businesses. Ron Camerzel, the Revenue Department's head of enforcement, said Colorado has reactivated a $1.4 million contract with a company called Franwell to build a computer system for tracking marijuana batches by radio frequency tag. The state had previously hired Franwell in 2011 to build such a system for the medical marijuana industry, but money troubles caused the state to deactivate the contract. Medical marijuana momentum should be building, but isn't, from mcall.com. 2-year-old Vivian Wilson from Scotts Plains, New Jersey, the story said, has a severe form of epilepsy resulting in seizures that last as long as an hour. Such seizures in children reportedly have been stopped by ingestion of cannabis in Colorado and California, where medical marijuana is legal. Similar legislation was passed in New Jersey, but its implementation has been blocked by Governor Chris Christie. In Pennsylvania, there is even less encouragement for victims of medical problems that may be eased by marijuana, including glaucoma, cancer, and other ailments in addition to epilepsy. State Senator Dalen Leach, Democrat of Montgomery, has introduced legislation to legalize medical marijuana for years, including Senate Bill 770 this year. Similar legislation, House Bill 1181, is co-sponsored by State Representative Mike Schlossberg of of Lehi. Both bills introduced in April were promptly buried in committee by legislative bosses, as has happened in previous years. There is little incentive to act, perhaps because Governor Tom Corbett has threatened to veto them. The politicians don't seem to care about medical benefits. They say marijuana is a drug, and some people enjoy drugs recreationally. How marijuana could improve the economy. An estimated 2,000 to 4,000 businesses produce marijuana for legal purposes, resulting in total sales of $1.2 to $1.3 billion last year, according to Medical Marijuana Business Daily. This has been your 420 Radio News for Friday, July 19th, 2013. I'm Russ Belville. When we come back, we go behind the headlines to take a look at GW Pharmaceuticals, the British drug manufacturer seeking to corner the market on cannaceuticals. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs, get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up!
Marijuana is harmless. That's what everybody says these days. It's fun. It's recreational. Some even call it medicine. But every year, millions of young people find out that marijuana is extremely dangerous. Every year, they find out that it's deadly. Marijuana smoke is lethal and toxic. Don't believe anything you've ever heard positive about smoking marijuana. It will kill you. Really. It's really gonna kill you. Don't smoke it. It will really, really kill you. Seriously. It's gonna kill you.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
The Russ Belville Show reminds you to never smoke and drive impaired. Hang out for a while. Share.
Welcome back, everybody. 14 after the hour, time for us to go behind the headlines. And today I'm looking at a piece that came from Business Week called Medical Pot, a drug maker bets on marijuana to treat diabetes, epilepsy, and more. And again, Business Week, folks, we're not talking about a medical journal or anything like that. This is where they're noticing the money that's possible here. Let me read to you from the piece. Medicinal marijuana advocates contend that smoking pot helps relieve pain and alleviate nausea. British drug company GW Pharmaceuticals is betting that medicine made from cannabis can also treat maladies as diverse as diabetes, colitis, and epilepsy. GW is the only pharma group in the world now selling a prescription medicine derived from marijuana plants as opposed to synthetic equivalents. The drug, a spray called Sativex, has been approved by regulators in 8 countries, Italy most recently, to treat spasms associated with multiple sclerosis. A request for U.S. Food and Drug Administration approval is also pending. The company this year plans to launch second-stage clinical trials of a cannabis-based drug that has showed promise in treating type 2 diabetes. GW Pharma, with $52.2 million in annual sales, is literally betting the farm on cannabis. Its entire drug pipeline is derived from pot that it grows at an undisclosed location in southeastern England. Diabetes, though, is just one of many diseases GW is taking aim at. It's developing a pot-based medication to treat inflammation in ulcerative colitis and is working with Otsuka Pharmaceutical of Japan on a drug that could treat epilepsy. The company also is carrying out further studies on the MS drug Sativex that could lead to its use in treating pain for cancer patients. Now, the development of these drugs is not the problem necessarily. There are so many things that we might be able to develop from the cannabis plant that could be beneficial to humankind that, you know, that's not my problem with this story. The problem with this story is that GW Pharmaceuticals and corporations that are going to be involved with this, like GW Pharmaceuticals, want to make sure that cannabis is guided into their profit, right? That cannabis becomes something they can profit from. And that provides an incentive for these companies and the people that support them and the people that have investment in them to be against medical cannabis laws. If I can get whole plant cannabis and juice it myself or vaporize it myself in order to treat my epilepsy or my Crohn's or my colitis or whatever it might be, then I don't have a whole lot of incentive to go buy the pills or the sprays or the inhalers that GW Pharmaceuticals comes up with. It will be in these corporations' best interest to lobby against medical marijuana laws and to lobby in the states that currently have medical marijuana laws to replace their whole plant cannabis with the Sativex, with whatever other drug they come up with. And this is, I mean, we are finding so much now. You know, they mentioned the ulcerative colitis. We had the story in our headlines about the study showing that it may cause complete remission of Crohn's disease. And I was watching our show, Cannabis Cure UK, our Cannabis Cure TV, and Cannabis Cure, our friend Greg, who suffers from Crohn's disease, has just said that on his most recent episode, that he feels like he's in complete remission on his Crohn's disease. And I remember meeting this kid getting off the plane from England after all he'd ever been able to smoke was swag. And he was a, you know, tiny little guy, all, you know, very skinny and pale and sickly looking. And within the 3-4 months he was here in the States, in Oregon, Washington, California, and Colorado, able to access good quality medical cannabis, we saw him put on weight. We saw him get healthier and healthier. And now that he's gained some status and some measure of, you know, cannabis celebrity, he's been able to go back to England and still be able to manage to get a hold of some decent cannabis. And his symptoms are gone. This guy who suffered so much when he was out here has finally, after a regimen of about a year or two of good quality cannabis, beaten back his Crohn's disease. Do you think GW Pharmaceuticals want to hear stories like that? You know, this is the Box Canyon that we have talked about many times on this show, and that is fighting only for medical marijuana, pinning the legalization of marijuana on why you use it is ultimately a mistake. It's ultimately a mistake because as soon as you peg it to why you use it, you imply someone has the authority to judge your why. Is your excuse good enough? And we'll talk about this at the end of the show too in our radical rant with the Roger Christie story. Another example of using why as the reason why you deserve to use marijuana. In that case, religious sacrament. And you're going to find, if you listen to this show long enough, that we fight for your right to use cannabis for any reason. All use is none ya. It's none ya damn business why I use it. It's a plant. Nature or God put it here. And I'm not hurting anyone by using it, including myself. I'm healing myself by using it. No one has any right to judge that. No one has any right to stop us from using that natural plant. So it's a double-edged sword. We want the creation of cannabinoid pharmaceuticals. I mean, these might be good medicines for some people. This might be a better solution for someone to use a Sativex spray than to inhale off of weed or a vaporizer or something, but it's not for everyone. So it's okay to develop these cannabinoid pharmaceuticals, but always, always fight for our access to the whole plant. Speaking of access to the whole plant...
Indeed. I think that most of you know what that sound means. Time for a smoke break.
All right, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
Have you considered medical marijuana? Double-blind, peer-reviewed studies have found cannabinoid therapies to be successful in treating the symptoms of Alzheimer's disease, ALS or Lou Gehrig's disease, brain cancer, chronic pain, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, GI disorders, hepatitis C, HIV/AIDS, hypertension, incontinence, MRSA, multiple sclerosis, osteoporosis, pruritus, rheumatoid arthritis, sleep apnea, and Tourette's syndrome, as well as anecdotal evidence in suggesting relief from anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress, plus reduction in the need for narcotic painkillers. Side effects from medical marijuana can include euphoria, relaxation, anxiety, panic reaction, paranoia, tachycardia, dry eyes, dry mouth, concentration and reaction time impairments, appetite increase, and in some U.S. states, arrest and incarceration. But medical marijuana is non-toxic and cannot cause overdose. Medical marijuana, it's not for everyone, but ask your doctor if medical marijuana may be right for you.
Big Daddy thinks.
Funky Roller Rink. Roller Rink.
Oh yeah, this is Big Daddy, and I'll be your freakazoid every Thursday night, right here at the Funky Roller Rink.
Funky Roller Rink.
11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, only on RadicalRuss.com.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Rockin' Friday, featuring rock, metal, and the hard edge of alternative country. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Well, time for our Daily Toker Tunes today, and normally at this time, Herb Thrasher would be joining us by telephone to tell us about the latest Rockin' Friday tune, but Herb Thrasher is off to Horning's Hideout at the Northwest String Summit. He goes there every year with his company, Herb Age Designs, and you ought to check out herbagedesigns.com while you're thinking about it. And Horning's Hideout is literally a hideout. There is no connection. There is no phone. There is no lights, no motor cars, not a single luxury. So we are going to have to do the Rockin' Friday, just you and me. And then Brian here, we're going to have to put together Rockin' Friday all by ourselves. And we're going to do just that. As you know, our Rockin' Friday, our definition of rock, is kind of a broad one. Herb Thrasher basically believes that anybody who plays a guitar fast is rockin', or thrashin', or whatever you want to call it. And that includes our friends on the countryside of thrash that we call alt country or hellbilly music. We're going to bring you a little bit of alt country hellbilly music right now. I've met these guys in Austin, Texas, I believe it was, when I was out at one of the Texas Normal events. They're called Clyde and Clem's Whiskey Business, not risky, but whiskey. Clyde and Clem's Whiskey Business, and they do a bunch of great covers. We got a few more of them that we'll play tonight on Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. At 8 o'clock tonight, we're going to do an all-hellbilly night. So if you like that, you know, hay in your teeth, boot-stomping kind of hard country music, that's what we're going to be playing tonight. And this song, well, it's a cover, and it's a cover of a very popular rap tune, which sampled a very popular 60s tune, which was also covered by some rock guys. So, I don't know what to make of this. I hope you like it. Time for some hits from the bong.
Still, it goes out. Trying to get a clean hit with a smoke. Funk is telling green shit. See my take a hit from the ball.
Looking at me. I can start smoking pot anytime I want.
Okay. How about right now?
Next week is better.
You disappoint me.
This is Willie Nelson, or Norman. And if you're one of the 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana last year, you need to get involved in the drive to legalize marijuana. We need your help to stop the senseless arrests of more than 800,000 Americans each year on marijuana charges. Together, we can end marijuana prohibition and stop the arrests of marijuana smokers. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at norml.org. Our call toll free 888-67-NORMAL.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back, everybody, and for today's activist agenda, I got to go back to the archives just because so busy trying to move into the new house, I didn't have enough time to book a guest for today. But this is my presentation at the prestigious Baker Institute, James A. Baker III, and it's at Houston, Texas at Rice University. I was featured in a presentation called Marijuana Legalization. It was basically on marijuana legalization. We've won the war on drugs. Have we won the war on drugs? Blah, blah, blah. And it was against Kevin Sabet, who's the architect of Project Sam and that whole new third way, kinder, gentler drug war. It was one of my last official functions, last official presentations as an employee of Normal. It's one of my proudest moments ever, and it's still the number one video at the Baker Institute. So here's at least the first third of it. My presentation.
Good morning, everyone. Texas. Welcome. And I just want to say I'm incredibly honored to be speaking here at the Baker Institute. I saw the list of panelists who were going to be appearing here. I saw more letters behind people's names than I see in a bowl of alphabet soup. PhDs and DAs and assistant chiefs and judges. And I kind of got to think, you know, why am I here? My goodness, I'm just a guy who, you know, grew up as a son of a musician. Always been around people that had used marijuana in my life, and now I work for Normal. And I am the chapter outreach coordinator. I help coordinate 177 chapters around the country and around the world, including some fine people from Dallas-Fort Worth and Waco, Texas, who are here today. I also run Normal Show Live on the Normal Network, which is a live daily talk radio show where for 2 hours a day I talk to the people and I interview the people involved, some of the people that are in this room. That are involved in fighting this war on drugs. So I think maybe why I'm here is because while I don't have any of that school book education on the issue of marijuana, I have a ton of real world experience here on the issue of marijuana. I'm thrilled here to be with Dr. Sabet, and we've gotten to speak a few times, and he's a wonderful man. And as far as people who have worked for the ONDCP goes, a very gracious person who has told me to my face he does not want to see me put in a cage for my use of marijuana, and I appreciate that. Thank you. But it is kind of intimidating because, you know, the man's going to Harvard and getting a PhD at Harvard. I mean, my biggest academic achievement was I was the Boise State mascot in 1985. I mean, he's worked in the White House. I once ate at a Waffle House. So, you know? But again, I think where I bring something to this debate is that I have skin in the game. I began smoking marijuana on July 4th, 1990, in a resort town called McCall, Idaho, with the guitar players in the band that I was playing with at that time. And I remember when that joint first went around the circle. And remember, my father is a drug addict and an alcoholic, and I'd always been told, just say no, drugs are bad, and okay, don't do it, just don't do it. When I saw that joint go around, I thought, oh my God, I'm in a band with guys that do drugs. These guys do drugs. And I refused it the first couple times it came around. And I was really shocked because when I did refuse, I was a little worried because I'd heard about the peer pressure, and they all kind of went, eh, okay. They just kept passing around. And after about four or five or six passes of this, and them giggling and just having a good old time and not really being any problem, I finally took a puff. And when I took that puff, I went, this is drugs? Really? This is what you were warning me about? I mean, I've been drinking since age 16. I've woken up in strange places. I'd had tequila stars. I mean, I've puked on my shoes. I've done some terrible things under alcohol. When I smoked that joint, I went, really? This was the problem? It makes me happy and lightheaded and go to sleep and eat Funyuns? That's what you need to throw me in jail for? This is terrible. So I got skin in the game. And because of that, under this war on drugs, I have been affected by this daily. The federal law right now for the possession of even a speck of marijuana is a misdemeanor with a possible one-year prison term and a $1,000 fine. Now, it's probably not going to happen, but it exists. It's there. That law is there. And for the past few years, when I've been living in Oregon, I've been growing marijuana plants. And for just one marijuana plant, the federal penalty is a felony with 5 years, $250,000 fine. And if you're growing a lot of marijuana plants, like this fine woman's son is, you're actually eligible for the death penalty in this country.
And I'm proud of you.
Exists. We are one of nine countries in the world that has a death penalty involved with marijuana. Now, you have to grow over 60,000 plants, make $2 million, $20 million over a certain number of years, continuing criminally out of enterprise, yada, yada, yada. But the fact exists, we have a death penalty for this plant. A death penalty. In Texas here, we've heard some of the folks talk about that, the misdemeanor, 6 months, probation, $2,000 fine, mandatory rehab. A plant is felony, 12 years, $10,000 fine. In Florida, it's 5-year felony for anything 21 grams or over. 21 of those sugar packets, 21 grams is about 3/4 of an ounce. Felony, 5-year sentence, $100,000 fine, and you lose your right to vote. And in Florida, you lose your right to vote as a felon permanently. After 5 to 7 years, you can apply to a clemency board to maybe get your right to vote. This has resulted in 8.2% of all Floridians of voting age being disenfranchised and 19.8% of African-American voters being disenfranchised in the state of Florida. It's really hard to change the laws that criminalize you when you can't vote to change them. Even in my home state of Oregon, where people think, oh, well, hippy-dippy liberal love fest, pot and love and patchouli and all that, yes, it is decriminalized, less than an ounce is a ticket. You do get a 6-month driver's license suspension, even if you weren't driving. And a $1,000 fine. But over an ounce in the state of Oregon is a felony, 10-year sentence, $100,000 fine. We go from 28 grams as a ticket to 29 grams is a 10-year felony. So it isn't even good even in the state of Oregon, where people think it's all hippy-dippy sun and light. And the folks here, and I saw a slide up there that said, oh, there's only 0.3% of people in prison and 0.1%. Well, first of all, sucks for them, huh? But for all the rest of the things that happen that have nothing to do with being in prison or being arrested. First of all, if you've been arrested, you can be considered a drug criminal for the rest of your life. That follows you around. If you're a student, you can lose your financial aid, because if someone's got a drug problem, the last thing we want them to have is a college education. You can lose your federal housing for being arrested for marijuana. They can be used against you in child custody cases. And these aren't just abstracts to me. These are my friends. Every person I know smokes marijuana. Every person I know and interact with directly smokes marijuana. And not just the, oh, I smoked a joint at the class reunion. I'm talking daily and weekly marijuana smokers. And not just medical smokers. People like me who just like to smoke pot. That's all we like. Just like to smoke pot. And even without the arrest, we've got people here like myself who've been living in fear of police officers. When I saw this assistant chief up here talking about, you know, the neighborhoods and the cities, I thought back to all the times when I wanted to call a cop, I wanted to interface with a police officer, but that thought was in the back of my head, better not. Are you sure you don't got something on you? You sure not going to come back to your house and want to check things out? You sure not going to want to bring a dog to your car? How many crimes go unreported? How many women live in domestic violence situations where they won't report the guy beating them because, well, they've got drugs, they might lose their kid? I mean, the tendrils of this are so intertwined, and I talk and deal with these people every day. And the bottom line is that this war on drugs essentially says to me, Russ Belbel, the federal government thinks you ought to be in a cage because you like to smoke pot. Now, if you'd like to go home and drink, you can drink Crown Royal until you pass out. That's fine. If you want to smoke, you can buy cigarettes and smoke until you get lung cancer and die. Don't got a problem with that. But if you want to smoke a little pot that never killed anyone, makes you happy, when you eat Funyuns, makes jazz sound good, we got to put you in a cage. I just think that's fundamentally wrong. Now, to this question, war on drugs has failed. Is legalization the answer? Well, as Russ Jones, the very well-named Russ Jones said, we don't have a war on drugs. We have a war on people. I have never seen a DEA agent point an automatic weapon at a marijuana plant. But a few of my friends working in dispensaries have had automatic weapons pointed at their heads. A few people that I've reported on have had armor-clad thugs breaking into their homes, throwing flashbang grenades, wearing body armor, shooting their dogs while their children are in the house. But I have never seen them point that gun at a plant. And while it is a war on people, it's not really a war on all people who use drugs. Like comedian Paul Mooney once said, I have the complexion of protection. I'm a middle-aged white guy. I'm not going to get busted for weed. Probably never. So it's not a war on people who use drugs. It's a war on some people who use drugs. And wait a minute, it's not even really a war on drugs, because in this society we celebrate drugs. You can't turn on TV without seeing another drug ad. I mean, we got beer ads funding the Super Bowl. We got Viagra ads everywhere. Look, what's up with those two people in the bathtubs anyway? And we got the cartoon depression. Have you seen those drugs in the cartoon, the Abilify, where the woman's got depression? Is your antidepressant not helping? And she's got that robe of depression she wears around. Well, if that pill doesn't help you, we've got another pill to help the pill that doesn't help you. And notice that the depression robe never really goes away. It still kind of hangs out off the side. We're not curing anything. We're managing it. Because that's the comeback. That's where you get the comeback pharmaceutical company. So it's not a war on all people who use all drugs. It's just some people using some drugs. And in fact, we celebrate drugs. Even the evil drugs, cigarettes, even the evil one, the one we all know is awful and terrible, we at least tolerate it. I used to work at a company that had, paid for by the company, a shelter outside, because we're in Portland, Oregon, it rains a lot, right? A shelter outside so the nicotine addicts could go and get their fix. Sounds different when I say it that way than smoke break, doesn't it? Nicotine addicts to get their fix, paid for by the company, and willing to accept the productivity loss of people having out every 2 hours for 15 minutes to do their drugs. So don't tell me we don't have a war on drugs, we think drugs are bad. It's just some drugs and some of the people that are using them are bad. And when we call it a war on drugs, it's not even really a war on drugs, it's a war on marijuana. As was cited earlier, 52% of all the rest of the war on drugs are for marijuana, 88% for possession alone. Here in Texas, it's 97% of all marijuana arrests are for possession, as they were talking about trace amounts and such, too. So what we really have here is not a war on drugs. What we have here is a war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. That's what we have. So the first premise of the question, the war on drugs, is kind of not exactly a true premise. And the other part is, has failed. Has failed at what? What has it really failed at? Because if you look at this with the right perspective, The war on drugs is an incredible success. I mean, if you own pharmaceutical stock and you're worried about medical marijuana competing with Xanax or Paxil or Prozac or any of those drugs or the opiate drugs that you sell, well, the war on drugs is doing great to keep that natural cheap competition out of your market. If you are an owner of prison stocks or you work as a prison guard in California, where the median income for a prison guard is $74,000 a year. By the way, speaking of well-funded drug lobby, that's twice my salary. If you're a cop and you want to keep your thumb down on a certain neighborhood, a certain class of people, there's nothing better than the war on drugs for collecting fingerprints, getting people in the system, being able to shake them down, maybe find some other crime they might be up to. And if you're trying to provide jobs for underskilled, undereducated people, those jobs that have flown out to Mexico and China, the factory jobs, the manufacturing jobs we don't have anymore, the war on drugs was an incredible success in providing underground income for people, for keeping unemployment rates below what they would really be if we looked at inner city neighborhoods and tried to find out. I don't know, Reggie, what's the black unemployment in most inner city neighborhoods? In the 15s, 20s, 30s? How much higher would it be if the kids that were dealing had to apply for unemployment instead? We would see massive amounts of unemployment. So if the war on drugs is all about creating jobs for cops and rehabs and prison guards and kids dealing in the streets, it's an amazing success. Well, let's take it at its face. Let's take it what we're really intending here. The war on drugs is a failure because of what Nixon said, right? Nixon said we're going to do war on drugs, we're going to end abuse and dependence, reduce the harms, all that. Well, people who've been up here before have already told you all about that, that it hasn't really worked. So, is legalization the answer? Well, again, depends. Is it the answer to stopping all people from ever getting high and using drugs, never causing any harms? Not at all. No. In fact, if you legalize, as some people have suggested, there might be a slight uptick. There might be some people that have never tried pot and think, well, it's legal now, let me get a shot. There might be people using pot now who think, oh, well, now that it's accessible and cheaper, I'll use more of it. But again, people are smoking pot now, and I haven't yet seen much harm from that in the first place. Maybe the legalization is the answer if our goal is to reduce harm. The harm of the crime and the prohibition-related violence, the harm of kids dealing in the high school parking lots, then maybe it is the answer. But for this entire question, I reject the initial premise. I reject the entire initial premise that it's any of the government's business or wherewithal or desire to stop me from smoking pot. I don't see the need to do so. I have been an employed citizen. I have worked and paid taxes for 20 years. I've consulted on Wall Street. I've worked in hospitals. I've done IT work. Some of the most complex brain mechanics that you can get involved with, doing network analysis and such. I always figure if Carl Sagan could smoke pot, so could I. It didn't seem to hurt my brain much either. So when people are talking about this war on drugs, you always have to boil it down to the fact that we're talking about arresting people and messing with their lives in an attempt to stop them from smoking pot. And we must address, is that even really something that's worth doing? Somebody said, the DA here said, or the assistant chief, what do we have, stone society? Oh, we end up with a stone society. Heaven forbid we have more people that are mellow, get along with each other, eat some Funyuns now and then. Oh, what a terrible world it would be. Now, I don't mean to diminish the problems of other drugs. I have experience in that realm, too. Like I said, my father's a drug addict. My father was addicted to speed. He was addicted to marijuana. He was addicted to alcohol, mostly an alcoholic. But for all those years, my dad was an alcoholic. I was suffering as a child from the things that happened. Him being away for 2 weeks at a time. Him getting all drunk and a little wacky in the house. And the terrible things that happened to me as a kid. Not once did any group of cops ever try to break down the door, threw in a flashbang grenade, and haul my dad off for my well-being. Never happened. But if it had been the pot, they'd have done that. We let people be alcoholics, but we don't throw them in prison for it. We do deal with their alcoholism if it causes problems to other people. But for the alcoholic itself, we don't throw them in prison. And this is happening not just to random statistics. I'm going to give the stats. 102 million people have tried it. 26 million people in America will smoke pot this year. That's more tokers than Texans.
They said, don't mess with Texas, don't mess with Tokers. We have nothing to fear. There's nothing scary about us. Our smoking pot is not going to cause us to run riot in the streets, go crazy, start shooting heroin or anything like that. We are productive, responsible, law-abiding citizens. Now, I know some of you might see, well, I see those pot rallies and all the tie-dye hippies and long hair and the piercings and the dreadlocks and, you know, they're a little crazy and they support Ron Paul and stuff. Whatever. Stereotype you want to put in there. But understand that because of the illegality of marijuana, you are only seeing the tip of the iceberg. The people with nothing to lose. The people who can be out and proud. You're not seeing the doctors, the lawyers, the teachers, the cops even, who use marijuana because they can't be out and proud. They can't talk about this. Now, and one more step. 2.6 million people in America are just like me. They smoke pot every day this month. 2.6 million people smoke pot every day this month. That's more than the population of Houston, Texas. We cannot have a policy that says the entire population of Houston, Texas are criminals. It makes no sense. And finally, to wrap up, whenever we talk about this war on drugs and the other side wants to talk about what we're going to what the effects might be, we get a lot of the muddying of the waters with weird statistics, things like, well, we can't legalize marijuana because alcohol and tobacco only bring in $40 billion worth of taxes, but they cost $400 billion worth of social effects. Yeah, that would be scary if marijuana were alcohol or tobacco. But alcohol and tobacco, if I'm not mistaken, kill people and are highly addictive. And marijuana is not. So I'm not scared by that. And there's the whole lot, you know, we don't really lock people up. Not a whole lot of them. Well, even one person locked up for using marijuana is one too many. And finally, this idea that we want to cut the head off the snake. I heard that. And to cut the head off the snake, we're going to go after the big guns. The big guns like Patricia Spotted Crow, just north of us in Oklahoma, who's doing 12 years in prison for the sale of $31 worth of marijuana. Two Dimebacks she sold. She's got 12 years in prison, separated from her children. What about the children, right? How about Dale Schaefer and Molly Fry, medical marijuana providers in California, growing marijuana under the state's Prop 215 in accordance and cooperation with their state, county, and local people, busted by the feds, now serving 5 years in prison each. Dr. Fry is a cancer survivor, breast cancer. She was growing it for other cancer survivors. She's in prison. And a friend of mine from Georgia, whose daughter was rousted from her bed in the middle of the night, 16 years old, grabbed by her hair by SWAT teams with assault rifles pointed at her head because some kid in her class knocked her off for having a gram or two. These are real stories happening to real people. So why not legalize marijuana? Why not? Well, it's not harmless, but it's not alcohol. It's not tobacco. Far less harmful than that. The results we've seen with alcohol and tobacco show that we can legalize the worst of drugs and yet bring down the harm from them through regulation and education. And it separates marijuana from those hard drugs that are truly devastating and cause the faces of meth that we were scandalized by. And finally, remember, when anybody says that we need to continue what we're doing or make cosmetic changes around the edges, they are saying one of two things. Russ Belville needs to be in a cage, or Russ Belville needs to be forced into a rehab he doesn't need, forced to be mandatorily re-educated, forced to be P-tested when he's not causing harm to anyone. Thank you for your time.
And I don't think that's a good idea. Let's not do that to Russ Belville. Hey, thank you for staying tuned and listening. I understand we've been having some problems with the chat server out there in Ustream land, but our audio server's up and the Ustream video seems to be up, so thanks for joining us. Wish we were able to talk to y'all. Coming up, we got some rant coming up on the Roger Christie story and the New York Times. Stick around.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
Yarr! Thar be pirates here!
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
You want answers?
You have offended my family?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth!
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
The New York Times has weighed in on religion and cannabis in a story they call Marijuana-Infused Faith Challenges the Definition of Religion. And they open up by talking about 64-year-old Roger Christie. We've talked about Roger Christie on the show before. He's a minister of the Universal Life Church, the Church of the Universe in Canada, and the Oklavuha, and I'm murdering that name, I'm sure, the Native American Church of Hilo, Hawaii, and most importantly, the founder of the Hawaii Cannabis THC Ministry. Back in 2010, Roger Christie, of course, was arrested along with several others from the THC Ministry, including conspiracy to manufacture, conspiracy to distribute, you know, and Roger Christie doesn't dispute this because he was giving it away as sacrament at his church. And from his email, he says he's a real street ministry serving the needs of our neighbors from all walks of life. And coming up on July 29th, Roger's lawyer is arguing in Hawaii federal court that he should be allowed to present a religious freedom defense at the eventual criminal trial. And the New York Times writes, he will base his argument on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed by Congress in 1993, which requires the government to show a compelling interest whenever it substantially burdens a religious practice. And those are two very key phrases, compelling interest and substantially burdens. Now, because of this act, in 2006, the Supreme Court ruled that a New Mexico church was allowed to use ayahuasca. And that's a very potent hallucinogen for sacramental purposes. It's a cactus, I believe, so some form of a cactus hallucinogen. And another church, and it's not listed in the New York Times. American Indians' use of peyote. That's another one that's been ruled that peyote's the cactus. Ayahuasca, it's like a tea off a leaf, I think. But anyway, doesn't matter. Both very, very, very potent hallucinogens, okay? But marijuana, when we have religions like Rastafari, we have the religions that Coptic Christians and the THC ministry in this case that claim marijuana as a sacrament, that's where it's run into problems and so far been shot down in most in all the court cases I'm aware of. So far, and they interview, this is the New York Times interviewing Douglas Laycock, who's a constitutional law professor at University of Virginia. He says, quote, the difference is that peyote and ayahuasca have little or no recreational market. And that is not likely to change because they make you sick before they make you high. And that's true. You take ayahuasca or peyote and you will retch. You will puke your guts out. And after that, you will trip your balls off. And so that's generally why they're part of ceremonies and very religious purposes, because it's like a cleansing or a purging, if you will. And marijuana, he says, this is Laycock speaking, marijuana has a huge recreational market. Diversion from religious to recreational uses and false claims of religious use would be major problems, end quote. And this is where those two phrases come in. Substantially burdens. Well, that's if you say a religion can't use a sacrament, you are substantially burdening that religion, right? Now, we can see a substantial burden on saying, you know, Satanists can't perform virgin sacrifices. Okay, that's a substantial burden, but obviously we can't have religions sacrificing virgins. I mean, we can't run out of, we have too few as it is, right? sorry. But the problem here is the compelling interest. And that's the part that's winning. In this test of substantial burden versus compelling interest, the compelling interest of the government is the Controlled Substances Act, is being able to say you can't use that drug. And if suddenly marijuana is a religious sacrament,
suddenly there's 26 million really religious people in this country. You know what I'm saying? That's the government's side of it. That's their compelling interest. But really, in actuality, what it comes down to is cops not being able to bust stoners. Because it's not as if 26 million marijuana smokers are going to immediately declare themselves members of certain religions. Some of us that are hardcore smokers or people that believed it in the first place are going to sign up and get their card. But what's going to happen is when someone gets busted, they're going to run out and get their card. They're going to suddenly believe, and then it's going to be so much more difficult for the government to try to prosecute in that case. So that's what they're talking about here, is why so far, trying to use Religious Freedom Restoration Act for cannabis is a problem. And what it really boils down to is your sacrament is A, too popular, and B, too mild. If you're allowing peyote and ayahuasca because they make you puke before you trip, there's not enough. Your sacrament's too mild, man. It's not really causing people actually like to use it. They like to use it on a regular basis, even when they're not, you know, at church. So that's a problem. Too popular and too mild. So with Roger Christie here, the way, he bases this, and this is the ultimate irony in the whole damn thing. You hear it all the time in America from people of this belief that America's a Christian nation, despite the Treaty of Tripoli. They think it's a Christian nation founded on Judeo-Christian principles, despite many of our founding fathers being atheists or deists. But anyway, they think it's a Christian nation, right? And if you flip to the very first page of their book, you will find Genesis 1:29. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant. For you it shall be as food. Right there, page one of what this entire country supposedly is based on. And that's what he's basing his religion on. That's what he's based. And so this ends with this, the writer here from New York Times, pointing out that Mr. Christie's case raises difficult, important questions. If only old or popular religions are protected, what would the First Amendment mean? If almost any belief system were a religion, then what would that mean? And this is where the Roger Christie case opens up a lot of questions about what we believe in this country and what we believe religious liberty is. Is it a religion if only 12 people practice it? Is it deserving of First Amendment protections if it was just invented yesterday? I tend to have a very liberal view of the Constitution. You may have found that out in my previous rants, but I think freedom of religion is a broader thing than just a specific building with a specific book and a specific set of rights. I think religion is a broad term that actually means freedom of thought, freedom of belief, to believe and to be and to express what you are. And in the context of the First Amendment having protections for speech and assembly and petitioning the government and all of those, in that context, I see the freedom of religion being far broader than just what book you're reading or what name is on the plate or what funny hat the minister wears. I think it has to do with what we believe inside. And if you believe cannabis is helping you and it's not harming people around you, then it's none of the government's damn business, is it? That's what the First Amendment means. That's what America means. The freedom to be who we are, to express who we are, so long as we do not harm others, to have robust debates, to have disagreements even, but finding a way to live together, get along, people of many cultures and creeds and beliefs and religions and colors and economic backgrounds. And we're not good at it yet, but the whole point is a more perfect union. Not perfect yet. I got a long way to go. You and I, we're all going to get this done together. Part of this is ending this stupid war on marijuana. Thanks for joining us here at the Russ Belville Show. We'll be here every day, every weekday, that is, when we're not traveling or on vacation. But we'll be here fighting as much as we can. And thanks for joining us. Thanks for supporting us. Become a VIP. Help us pay the bills. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed.